Welcome back to Time Out Radio on KDRT 95.7 FM in Davis, California. This is your host, Rohan Bakshi. Soccer is the world's most popular sport and has been around for centuries. To hear all about the history of soccer, check out episode 89 of Time Out Radio, released in February this year. Today we look at three of soccer's unforgettable and bizarre stories that might make you shake your head in disbelief. So sit back and relax as Time Out Radio takes you back in time to some of soccer's dramatic and unexpected moments. Let's start with the story of Diego Maradona's infamous Hand of God goal. Maradona scored it in the Argentina vs. England game in the quarterfinals of the 1986 World Cup. The game was held 4 years after the Falklands War between Argentina and the United Kingdom, and was part of the already intense Argentina-England soccer rivalry. Argentina in 1986 had a pretty average soccer team, and Maradona was its star player. They were in the second half of the game, and no goals had been scored yet. England's defenders had been working hard to stop Maradona from advancing throughout the game. Argentina's team was passing the ball around the edge of England's penalty box. England's midfielder Steve Hodge kicked the ball high above the goalkeeper, expecting the goalkeeper to catch it, especially since goalkeeper Peter Shilton was about 8 inches taller than 5 foot 5 inch Maradona. But to everyone's surprise, the ball ended up in the back of the net. At first, everyone assumed Maradona had headed the ball, but Maradona had actually steered the ball with his fist. The referee did not have a clear view of the play, and allowed the goal to stand based on the assessment of the linesman. That was before instant video replays became a thing. The goal gave Argentina a 1-0 lead. 4 minutes after this goal, Maradona scored a second goal past 5 England players. It was known as the goal of the century and led Argentina to win this unforgettable game 2-1. After the game, Maradona told the press that the goal was scored un poco con la cabeza de Maradona y otro poco con la mano de Dios, which translates to a little with the head of Maradona and a little with the hand of God. Argentina went on to win the 1986 World Cup final with a victory over West Germany in the final match. Maradona was awarded the Golden Ball for his 5 goals and 5 assists. Next, we look at a March 1976 game between Leicester City and Aston Villa in England. Aston Villa defender Chris Nicol scored all 4 goals in this game that ended in a 2-2 draw. Nicol opened by scoring an own goal for Leicester, and then he scored a goal for his team. Next, he scored a diving header, another own goal that Nicol himself called the best goal he scored in his career. Then he scored another goal for his team. After this incredible feat, Nicol asked if he could keep the game ball as a souvenir, but the referee kept it instead because it happened to be the ref's last game. Nicol passed away this year at the age of 77. Aston Villa FC described him as a gritty, uncompromising center back, powerful in the air, and a dominant figure at the heart of Villa's defense for over 5 seasons. Sam Wynn of Oldham Athletics in 1923 had previously scored 2 goals for both sides in a game between Oldham and Manchester United that ended in a draw, and such a thing hasn't happened since. Since I'm personally a goalkeeper, I thought I'd wrap up this segment with a goalie story. It was a Christmas Day match in 1937 between Charlton Athletic and Chelsea at the Stamford Bridge Stadium in London. Sam Bartram was the Athletic's goalkeeper, and he was diligently guarding his post when a heavy fog rolled across the pitch. The score was 1-1, and the game had to be called off after 61 minutes due to dense fog. The players and referees all left the field, except for Bartram. He remained at his position for about 15 minutes trying to look through the fog, waiting for the ball to appear. A police officer found him there and walked him off the field. Bartram describes this experience in his autobiography in these words, quote, "Soon after the kickoff, fog began to thicken rapidly at the far end, rolling steadily towards me. The referee stopped the game and then, as visibility became clearer, restarted it. We were on top at this time, and I saw fewer and fewer figures as we attacked steadily. I paced up and down my goal line, happy in the knowledge that Chelsea were being pinned in their own half. Quite obviously, however, we were not getting the ball into the net, for no players were coming back to line up, as they would have done following a goal. Time passed, and I made several advances towards the edge of the penalty area, peering through the murk, which was getting thicker every minute. Still, I could see nothing. The Chelsea defense was clearly being run off its feet. After a long time, a figure loomed out of the curtain of fog in front of me. It was a policeman, and he gaped at me incredulously. "What on earth are you doing here?" he gasped. "The game was stopped a quarter of an hour ago. The field's completely empty." And when I groped my way to the dressing room, the rest of the Charlton team, already out of the bath and in their civvies, were convulsed with laughter. Our guest on today's episode is sports writer Evan Ream. He recently finished writing a book that is being released in a couple of weeks, Not When But If, The Story of Sacramento Republic FC. He tells us about his journey to writing soccer stories, starting from when he fell in love with soccer as a 14-year-old, to being a professional writer for the Davis Enterprise, and now as my high school journalism teacher at Da Vinci High in Davis. Then we explore our place of the week, Mexico City. It was home to that famous Argentina versus England game in the quarterfinals of the 1986 FIFA World Cup at the Estadio Azteca in Mexico City. The game included two of the most well-known goals in soccer history, both scored by Argentina's captain, Diego Maradona. Up next is La Ciudad by Odessa.
Don't.
You're listening to Time Out Radio on 95.7 KDRT. Joining us now is Evan Ream, who is a sports writer and the communications manager for NorCal Premier Soccer, as well as a soccer coach for local club Davis Legacy. And we've had Evan on a couple of times before in Time Out Radio, first in the early days, one of the first five episodes, I think, of Time Out Radio, where he talked about his journalism career. And then back last year after the World Cup in Qatar, he had gone to see some of the games down there. And we talked about, you know, his thoughts sort of in the World Cup and kind of the whole logistics of that. So he's back again. This time he's going to be talking about a book that's being released, just called Not When But If, The Story of Sacramento Republic FC. So, Mr. Ream, first off, how did this book project begin and what was the main inspiration behind it?
Well, about 9 years ago, I was approached by a couple of, a couple of people who were covering Minnesota United, who at the time wasn't an MLS team, but was soon to get an MLS bid. And both of them, their names are Wes Burdine and William Stenross. They started a publishing company. And with that publishing company, they mostly were covering Minnesota United stuff, and they were doing like an annual book each year. And they wanted to branch out to more markets. And because of the success of Sacramento Republic FC, and because I was covering them, we sort of met and spoke about it. And that's how the project sort of got underway. That publishing company no longer exists. And we, in maybe 2018 or 19, we talked about it and they said, hey, like, you can have all the work, including our edits that you've done, and basically go finish it yourself. And so that's what I did. It took a really long time, but finally on May 11th, people will be able to buy the book. So yeah, it's been 9 years since I started it. Mm-hmm. Not exactly the quickest write.
Yeah. And, you know, the tagline of your book is How Sacramento Republic FC Rose from the Ashes of a Half Century of Failed Local Soccer Experiments to Win a Championship, Galvanize the City, and Become an MLS Expansion Favorite. So what is your favorite memory so far related to writing this book?
Well, it wasn't transcribing, I'll tell you that. because some of the interviews were, you know, multiple hours long. Right. And especially, I don't know if you've ever done this, but like an interview where there's three or four people talking different times. And especially back then, we didn't even have any, when I started transcribing, we didn't have any of the nice software we do now. But no, so probably my favorite memory just from writing the book isn't necessarily about 100% writing it, but just being there to experience the first season. And sort of like overnight, soccer was big in Sacramento. I mean, it was a city that, as you're well aware, is sort of starved for professional sporting success. At the time I started writing it, the Kings hadn't made the playoffs in almost a decade, and that was extended even further. But this team was immediately successful. And not only was it immediately successful, but the World Cup was that year as well. And soccer sort of just exploded in the Sacramento area because we had like pretty favorable starting kickoff times for games on the West Coast. And then also we had this new team that was immediately successful and won the championship and was selling out every game. It was so successful that it exploded into the mainstream in a way that I don't think soccer ever has in Sacramento before. So it was just like the vibe, the energy, the buzz at going to those games, talking to the players, coaches, fans. That was a really, really cool experience.
And what makes this book different from sort of all your past writing projects that you've had in throughout your career?
Well, it's about 10 times as long as anything I've ever written before. But man, this was a tough project, right? Everything else, I mean, even when I started out doing journalism, right, it took me maybe an hour or two to write like a 500-word story on just a gamer, right? And then eventually, you know, I got practice in, got my reps in, and was able to do that in much less time. And then when I started writing some long form journalism, that took me forever, you know, do like a 5,000, 10,000 word project. But then I sort of streamlined that as well. And then writing this book was incredibly challenging because it's about 87,000 words. And that's after I cut about 350,000. And so different in just the scope, right? My book is like 190 pages. I don't know how anyone constantly turns out like 400 page books. To me, that's crazy. But just the scope was completely different, unlike anything I've ever done before. And honestly, a lot more challenging.
And what makes this book different from the other books that are out there about soccer?
I don't know if there's another book out there that's about a lower division soccer team in the United States, right? And I don't think that there's anything that's been written about Sacramento Republic at this length before, but also there's a couple of chapters where I go back into the history of the sport in the city, as well as there's a chapter about the Kings. But I think what's interesting is it goes through every different part of the city's sporting landscape. There hasn't been a lot written, filmed. I mean, before Lady Bird, nothing, no movies about Sacramento, nothing, right? So people don't even know what Sacramento stands for, other than the fact that it's close to San Francisco and Lake Tahoe and the state capital. So it's a lot of interesting stuff about the history and culture of the city that I think makes it unique.
And what would be the best way to find your book upon release May 11th for anyone interested in, you know, buying or checking out your book?
Yeah, so thanks for that. The book will be available on Amazon right now, mostly because I'm busy and whatnot. I haven't even reached out to bookstores to see if they'd want to carry it. I'm sure they would, but it will be available on Amazon. So for now, that's the only place, but we'll see about the future. And the link will be live May 11th at some point. I'll post that on probably my Twitter, my X account.
Yeah, and I read on your website that you fell in love with soccer when you were 14 years old, and your brother brought home a VHS tape of a 2006 World Cup qualifier between the U.S. and Trinidad and Tobago, and then after seeing that game, you were hooked onto the sport. So tell us about how falling in love with soccer led you to your writing career.
Yeah, it was nothing like intentional. It was all sort of by accident. I would just constantly be reading about soccer whenever I got the chance, right? Learning, you know, how different leagues work, learning about different players, the history of the game, etc., was always something that I was interested in, and something to this day, I still, when I go home, I probably read articles about soccer for at least an hour every day. And, you know, when I got to college, I had to choose a major, sort of did that at random. And I just decided, I was like, well, you know, I've spent the last 7 years reading about the sport constantly. And the best way to improve your writing without actually writing is reading. And so I decided to give journalism a try. And I've been thankful that I've gotten the amount of opportunities that I have, because, again, it was nothing like there was no plan. I didn't have like an idea of what I wanted to do. It's all kind of happened by accident. And maybe if I lived somewhere else or didn't know the people I know, then I wouldn't have gotten all these opportunities to essentially write about sports for a living and not actually grow up.
Mm-hmm. And in addition to being a professional writer, you're also the journalism and yearbook teacher at Da Vinci High in Davis. What advice would you give to someone who's wanting to share their love of sports with others through sports journalism?
It's a good question. In general, I think that journalism is a changing field, right? It's not going away, but, you know, print is definitely not what it used to be. And if anybody's an aspiring journalist, I would recommend, you know, getting into multimedia, like doing what you're doing, right? People love podcasts right now, also stuff with video, right? Like, so we still are going to need people to tell these stories. Just the medium of the story is probably going to change. So again, I would want somebody to, one, you know as much as possible about the sport, right? And two, right, get experience in telling stories and get experience in new forms of media with the way things are going. I don't know how much longer we're going to have newspapers, but there's always going to be a place for people who are good storytellers.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, as always, Mr. Reem, for joining us on Time Out Radio today.
Thank you very much for having me, Rowan. I appreciate it.
Of course, that's Evan Reem, who's a sports writer and the communications manager for NorCal Premier. And that was All the Highs by San Holo. In today's travel segment, we visit Mexico City, home to 9 million people. It's the capital of Mexico and one of the oldest cities in North America. The city lies at the base of an ancient dry lake, about 7,350 feet above sea level, and is surrounded by mountains. The Aztec founded a city in the area back in the 1300s. They believed that they saw a sign from their god. They saw an eagle perch on a cactus eating a serpent on an island in Lake Texcoco. There, they founded a city called Tenochtitlan, which was the center of the vast Aztec Empire in the 1500s that covered central and southern Mexico all the way to present-day Guatemala. The Spanish soldier Hernan Cortes and his troops destroyed Tenochtitlan in 1521. They built a new city there, which was the seat of the Spanish Empire in Mexico. Mexico gained independence in 1821, and Mexico City became the country's capital a few years later. In the early 1900s, the city was the center of the Mexican Revolution. The city saw a period of growth through the 1900s, and in the early 21st century, was among the fastest growing cities in the world. It's now one of the world's largest cities, and a major cultural, economic, and educational center. The city center has a plaza called the Zócalo, which is surrounded by historic buildings such as the National Palace and the Metropolitan Cathedral. The cathedral was built in the 1500s by Spain. It's slowly sinking because of the area's soft clay soil, the uneven foundation of the pre-Hispanic structures it was built on, and the earthquakes in the area. Architects have been working to fix this issue, and the cathedral is on the list of the 100 most endangered sites in the world. While in Mexico City, you can also visit artist Frida Kahlo's birthplace and the house where she grew up in the neighborhood of Coyoacán. It is known as the Blue House, or La Casa Azul, because of the home's cobalt blue walls, and it now has the Frida Kahlo Museum. Kahlo lived there with her husband Diego Rivera for many years and passed away there. You can see many of Diego Rivera's famous murals at the National Palace, the Palace of Fine Arts, and many other locations in Mexico City. Rivera's murals are colorful, striking, and beautiful. They are also social and political statements and tell the story of historical and revolutionary figures, working class people, indigenous cultures, and social injustices. While in the city, you can experience its intense soccer culture. Mexico City has three professional soccer teams, Club America, Club UNAM, and Cruz Azul. The city hosts about 75 professional soccer games a year and has hosted two FIFA World Cup finals. The 1970 final was the first staged in North America. Mexico City's largest soccer stadium is Estadio Azteca. It seats 104,000 spectators and was the location of the soccer game with Diego Maradona's two famous goals that we spoke about earlier in this episode. For a different kind of live entertainment, check out a Lucha Libre event at Arena Mexico. This is a unique style of freestyle professional wrestling with colorful masks, fast high-flying maneuvers, and very boisterous crowds. If all this activity makes you hungry, try out some of Mexico City's delicious street food. You can't leave the city without trying out its street tacos on small corn tortillas, or elote, which is grilled corn on the cob served with mayo, chili powder, and cotija cheese, or tamales, corn dough filled with meat or cheese and steamed in a corn husk. For a sweet treat, have some churros, a deep-fried dough pastry served with a chocolate dipping sauce. Make sure to save a day to visit the famous canals of Xochimilco, the remnants of a vast water transport system built by the Aztecs. There you can find a colorful boat to see floating gardens while food vendors, artisans, and even mariachi bands ride past you. The floating gardens were constructed by pre-Hispanic people of the region more than 1,000 years ago using branch and reed rafts. They covered these rafts with mud from the bottom of the lake and cultivated fruits, vegetables, and flowers on them, which they transported to the Aztec city of Tenochtitlan via canals. In time, the rafts took root and became islands. So that wraps up our journey to our place of the week, Mexico City. All right, let's call a timeout for Timeout Radio. This was your host, Rohan Bakshi. You're listening to KDIRT 95.7 FM with Grassroots Grow. Have a great day, everyone.